Well, hi, everybody. It's Reanimated. Welcome to the show. This is Stuart. I'm one of your hosts, and joining me from the New York is H.A. Conrad. How is the New York?
The New York is great. Full-on pollination season.
Good grief. Tell me about it.
So, yay. But all sorts of beautiful things going on. So I'm going to check out the cemetery to see the remainders of the cherry blossoms. So that's good.
I'm sure it's a lovely time from the promenade through the cemetery.
It always is.
Yeah. One of your favorite go-tos.
My favorite.
Today we're going to be talking about Last Voyage of the Demeter. And we've got a little bit of news. But let us proceed into those elements. The first article I tagged was a small neighborhood rag you probably haven't heard of called the New York Times wrote a fond, nostalgic piece about Dawn of the Dead, the original, the Romero, because it's its 45th anniversary. And there's a lot of anniversaries going on right now.
Yep.
Because the follow-on Dawn of the Dead is also celebrating its anniversary, 20 mm-hmm. years, as is Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah, kind of hard to choose, right?
It's pretty wild to have all of these happening at once. Yeah, and exactly. What a time to how do you pick your favorite? But there's a couple of articles this week. And Simon Pegg was posting like some behind the scenes stuff, photos on his Instagram account from making Shaun of the Dead with Edgar Wright and Nick Frost, and you know, it just looked like they were kids. They were little kids basically making that movie. It's wild. Yeah. So the New York Times, it just felt like it was quite a sentimental look back at this, you know, influential horror film is kind of the framing that they have. But I don't know that you have it. Did you have any other feelings about the article, or were you just like, yeah, right on, New York Times?
I know that, you know, the Nighthawk, which is, you know, one of my favorite theaters, and, you know, not shockingly, Alamo is playing these, or at least the original, the OG Dawn of the Dead. And, you know, I may try to see it, but it's a busy weekend, so it's kind of hard to make that work. But I think it's cool that these things are happening, and the fans, it's always fun to see these things in the theater, you know, and especially because it's like, you know, sort of a limited time. Usually it's the fans that are there seeing it, so people are pretty enthusiastic. So I kind of think that's fun. Look, I mean, all these things kind of colliding is fun too. So I'm all for it. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean, same thing. I was just happy to see mainstream
right.
art critics looking back at this and saying, you know what, these were great films. And because the next article also on this list is 20 years later, I'm still bummed about the end of the Dawn of the Dead film from 2004. This is from the Mary Sue, because, you know, the author is like, I stayed until after the credits that I saw what happened to those poor bastards when they got off the boat. And I'm still mad about it. And I'm just like, yeah, man.
And I kind of agree. Like, because it's like, you know, also the dog, you're hoping that the dog at least survive. I don't know.
The dog wouldn't have been eaten by zombies because it was always able to walk through, right? But it was like, it lured, it ran off the boat barking. I think that's kind of how that story unfolded. It was like, and plus it was all in like found footage format. So it was a little hard to follow. So this woman is like, oh, you know, like we spent 2 hours getting to know and care about these people. And then at the very end, in this like kind of sneaky way, they basically implied that everybody's going to be killed. And that's so depressing. And I'm just like, I mean, yeah, but yes. And this is the genre we signed up for, like happy endings with Rick and Michonne show being the notable exception. Happy endings are not a thing in the zombie genre. Like, it's just not something we expect. And so I think when you get one, and I wonder, I haven't read any critical response like, oh, it was way too happy of an ending, or they shouldn't have, you know, survived at the end, Rick and Michonne. But against this backdrop of this article and how mad this, well, you know, mm-hmm. I'm putting that in air quotes, but how upset the author is about the end of Dawn of the Dead, Do you feel any kind of juxtaposition there between those two kind of
So I
expectations?
do, and you know, I was thinking that that's what they were going to do to Rikki Michonne, and I had prepped myself for it. And honestly, I was kind of glad they survived and had that reunion with their kids. Look, I know that there's a lot of people that are all mad about it, but I'm not.
You think there, I haven't been looking for those reactions, but have you seen some of them?
Yeah, I have,
Yeah.
and people are like, "Oh, it's so stupid," blah blah blah, and I'm like, "Yeah, but you know what? There's enough martyrs out there. There's enough death and destruction out there. I'm cool with those two characters riding off into the sunset. I'm fine with it. Really great to see Andrew Lincoln and Danai Gurira together, and truly, they do have chemistry. Honestly, I would love to see them in other things together, not just the Walking Dead franchise. So, I'm sure they're both way too busy to do that kind of thing, but they really do the job well in those characters. And unlike, thinking about the amount of time that has passed between when they had last been on screen and this series, there was no sort of like awkwardness, or at least I didn't see it. They really fell right back into those roles and chemistry, and you can't say that for everything.
Yeah,
So,
true. True.
I
I was
hope.
happy for them to have their happy ending. It was clear that Andrew Lincoln wanted that happy ending with that like panning shot and a group hug and all this stuff. And you know, the author of this article, whose name is Kate Hudson, but I don't know if it's the same person as the famous Kate Hudson, writes at the end, "The older I get, the more I crave happy endings because they're so rare in real life. Good people we know in life rarely reap their rewards, and the dum-dums we hate who treat people terribly tend to fail upward." I mean, that's some real talk, and I feel that too. And you know, like there, I feel like happy endings used to be. There was a time, probably in what you might consider a darker period of American history, when happy endings were more common. Just I think because, well, it was a different approach to the art, but also it was like we need some more positivity in our lives, and maybe we do need to swing back the other way.
I agree. And I think, it's not going to happen all the time, but happening from time to time is no issue for me anyway. So.
So that was from the Mary Sue and the 45-year anniversary from the New York Times. And then we go to some pretty exciting news. And mostly I'm just excited that they're really cracking open this walnut that is the trilogy of 28 years later and whatever the other films are going to be called.
Yep, they keep shilling this, keeping it in the news. So,
Which
I'm
is crazy in a way, because like these movies cannot be close, not even close to
not.
coming
No,
out anytime
and that's the
soon.
thing. That's what's so interesting. The hype machine for this is pretty interesting. So, I've been enjoying just watching how this has been unfolding, and you've got to kind of keep. I mean, my guess is that they're. I mean, they must have. They've already signed up for all the stuff, so it's not like they're looking for funding.
Yeah, Sony won that bidding war. And
Right.
they've got a budget for at least the first couple films. So the first one is going to be directed by Alex Garland. No, it's the other guy, Danny Boyle, right?
Danny Boyle and
Then
Alex Garland, I
now
think
the
it's.
second movie is going to be, well, they're in talks. I don't think it's a done deal, but Nia DaCosta, who directed Candyman, the 2021 version, and the most recent Marvels movie, is in talks to direct the second of the trilogy. And that's pretty cool. Like I haven't seen Candyman, so I don't know what her horror bona fides are like, but Marvel's was a delightful film. I don't know if delightful is what you want to go for with a 28 years later sort of film, but I would say that this director knows how to manage a large budget, having done Marvel stuff, MCU stuff. And I imagine that Candyman was not made with a ton of money, and hopefully, I don't know if it was good, so I can't really say if that was a success or not. But I saw the original. You ever seen Candyman?
Oh yeah, the original, definitely a huge fan.
But not the most recent one.
No, I like look, I don't know, in the whole Omen franchise, the new one that just came out, I just and Roadhouse, any kind of sort of like remake of some of those classics. I mean, I guess it just feels
Little
like
skeptical.
I'm a little skeptical. I mean, so the thing I loved about Candyman was just this really cool the cool way they treated that movie. And I know it had a bunch of other sort of films that followed it. I didn't see those. I just saw the original.
Yeah, me too. Mostly because it was set in Cabrini Green, which was like right down the street from where I grew up.
Yeah, and I mean Virginia Madsen was awesome in that, and just it had just a really great storytelling vibe. So I just didn't feel the need to sort of watch the big remakes and those kinds of things. And but again, I generally don't feel the need to do that. Some of these zombie films aside, obviously. I'm sure it had a lot of money tied to it, and so I'm sure it's fine.
Yeah.
I don't
Either
know.
way, it, kind of exciting news that they're not only dealing with the first film, which, and both of these, I think, are set to start filming this year. The first one definitely starting filming production this year. The second one to be a right away, we're going to start filming it sort of scenario. So that's very exciting. I'm thrilled that this project that we were getting teased with for years suddenly seems to be hitting the ground at a sprint, and that's fantastic.
I mean, my only thought is like they're trying to probably attach, get the hype machine going so they can attach like really big names. My
Who
guess is that.
wouldn't read about this with Alex Garland, Danny Boyle, Cillian Murphy executive producing, and not be like, hell yeah, that guy just won for Oppenheimer, right? Like,
Well, I mean, I think that's they're capitalizing upon that. And
yeah, t
I
hit
mean,
strike while the iron's hot, man.
and I'm not trying to be, I have a feeling they're gonna Cillian Murphy a little bit in this and then have other people take over as they did in the first one. In
Maybe
the
they'll
first
kill him off in the first movie or
they
something.
may, they may. So I'm wondering if that's a piece of this, is that they're trying to attach like other big names to this, while and striking while the iron's hot. But it'll be interesting to see.
Sure.
So anyway. All right. And then what was our last little bit?
Well, do you remember a few weeks ago, it was something on like Twitter that the Asylum had posted like big news coming soon, and then a picture of the Z Nation, some sort of art from Z Nation, and people were collectively losing their minds. I think Bloody Disgusting was conjecturing that, oh, maybe it's Black Summer or maybe not. And I think now we sort of know what this is. And it was basically that Asylum sold the rights to what's this, Film Rise, an organization I've never heard of. For Z Nation, and they are at least suggesting that this new owner is going to revive the franchise. And so that's exciting. Like, you know, we've kind of talked about this before, that Z Nation was not our favorite thing, but the associated IP of Black Summer is one of our favorite things. So it, we'll have to see where they land. I imagine if they want to do it on the cheap, they will do a Z Nation. And if they want to spend a little more money, they will do a Black Summer. Or maybe they'll land somewhere in between.
It'll be interesting to see what happens with this. If it means maybe this is, again, that cryptic announcement.
Yeah.
Essentially, maybe they have more money and interest in backing some of the things, and that'd be cool. So, I look forward to seeing what happens with this. I would, of course, love to see another Black Summer. So I'm pulling for it. But we'll see. Let's see how this unfolds. Again, this was like an odd little announcement to me because, but. We'll see how this plays out.
It's like a press release from
Yeah.
Media Play, on the website is mediaplaynews.com. It feels like something you would find in a Variety or a Hollywood Reporter.
Yeah.
It's just a quote from the new guy who owns everything and the guy who sold it to him from Asylum. And the end of his quote is also interesting. We also look forward to sharing other exciting news regarding the Z Nation franchise very soon.
Yeah, so he's definitely teasing some stuff, I would say.
What
So,
else could it be? Yeah,
yeah.
so we'll see. I guess stand by to stand by. We'll find out more. Potentially very exciting. Or at the very least, if it's a Z Nation reboot, or a re reviving of that franchise, that's still good. There's no such thing as a zombie show we don't want to be on TV, except for Fear the Walking Dead. Very few exceptions. Okay.
Are you ready to talk about our feature?
That's all the news. And
Third
so, yes, we shall
story?
talk now about Last Voyage of the Demeter,
Yeah.
which came out in 2023. It's an interesting backstory to this film. Apparently, it's been in development hell for 20 years, which sucks. Apparently, Viggo Mortensen was at one point associated with this film. Did you read about that?
I did, and that's not shocking. Often these things end up taking a really long time to produce, depending on what's going on with it, and people get attached, unattached, because it's all about timing in terms of making movies. It doesn't totally shock me based upon the content of what this film is.
Yeah, well, who knows what it was 20 years ago? I'm sure
Right,
that they,
for those of you who, I'm sure everybody, most people who are listening to us have some idea of this if they're at all a fan of Dracula. But the Demeter was the ship that brings Dracula to the UK. And it's, kind of one of those things that, like, in the book is sort of referred to, and in most movies there's like a montage scene of him voyaging, if at all, or they'll mention it. They did a little bit of that for the very weird and horrible remake that they had with Gary Oldman and Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder in the 90s. That was in the 90s, right?
Was there a boat section of that film?
There is a very minimal boat section where they talk about his voyage to the UK.
Yeah.
And there's some things to talk about here, definitely.
So in
But
Bram Stoker's novel, there's an excerpt in one of the chapters, and I don't know, I haven't read it, I don't know how long it is, that basically is like an excerpt from the captain's log, which is how they're like, hey, you know what? That seems like we can make a whole movie just based on that captain's log excerpt. So
right, but
that's
you're going
what
to
they did.
sustain a whole story on a, and everybody knows the story. So that's like, there's a lot that you'd have to overcome here. And,
Yeah, because you're like you kind of know the end, in a way.
in a way. So anyway, I can see why this would have been possibly a hard sell. But often this happens with projects and things like that. But yeah, is it Andre Ovredal? I don't know how to pronounce
The
Norwegian.
dude's got a line through the O, so I don't know how to pronounce that either.
Yeah,
But I
me
would
neither.
say Andre Ovredal, maybe. But that's the director. Screenplay was a double whammy. Bragi Schut Jr. and Zach Olkovich. Story, Bragi Schut Jr., based on the captain's log from Dracula by Bram Stoker, and then a number of producers. And then we've got the cast, honestly, is kind of bananas.
Yeah,
Even
the
if you've
cast
lost Viggo
is crazy.
Mortensen, you've still got all of these amazing people, including Heath. Heath
Yeah,
himself
I
is
was going
here.
to say Heath has reappeared. He's great.
The
And
dude just went to go do movies and never looked back at The Walking Dead is really
yeah,
where Heath
I
went,
know.
but
He's pretty good. I was so psyched.
I
I'll
mean,
admit to you, like,
H.A.
I
Conrad, before I let you go too far down that path of how great Corey Hawkins is, and he is a great actor, he can't really do a British accent.
No, he cannot, and they probably should have just not had him try.
But they can't have him be a black American on this boat in Romania. Like, that doesn't make
Yeah,
sense either. So that's
I
just
know,
tough.
but yeah, he had a rough time with the accent, much like Keanu Reeves had a rough time with the accent in the yeah. Although it was even, I will say, at least Corey Hawkins was trying.
I
And
mean,
I
they
don't.
have a bunch of Americans or two, because David Dasmalchian, I don't know how you say that guy's name, but he's also American and is doing a Eastern European accent in this film. But yeah, Corey
But
Hawkins is fantastic. He has the gravitas. He is the hero of the movie. I don't know if what role Viggo Mortensen was originally ID'd for. Maybe he was Captain Elliot. Maybe he was this character of Clemens. But that would have been weird, right?
but Corey Hawkins is just I was really psyched to see him, and somehow it didn't it sort of sink in, or I didn't process that it was him until I just, the opening scene. I'm like, oh, it's Heath. So
Yeah.
there you go. In any case, but we also have Liam Cunningham at, our we one of our faves
The
from Game
Garlic Knight himself.
Onion Knight, Onion Knight.
Sorry, I called him. He's a garlic is what's in my head for that dude. But yeah, he brings a lot to any production he's in.
Mean, maybe it would be the Garlic Knight for this, the vampires, but not.
I've been watching. Oh yeah, that would be interesting. I've been watching Three Body Problem, and he's in that as an Irish like spy base or spy master. Very different role, but I like to see that this guy has some range. Because he tends to play just like likable older authority figures. It's kind of
Right.
what he tends to do.
And then also in this film, like the big thing, which it's like, this is just what this guy does, was is Javier Botet.
Yeah.
And he, if many of you, hopefully, if you are fans of this show, remember him from Wreck. And he is terrifying in that. He's pretty terrifying in this too. And so that's, he's kind of doing the creature thing. And we'll talk a little bit about his this version of Dracula as we get into it. But I immediately recognized him. Just
Really?
well, he's got this very specific physicality that, and it's just like, wow. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure that's a dude from Wreck.
I mean, I honestly, until I saw the credits at the end, I did not put that together, but I thought the creature was almost entirely CG.
Oh.
But like, or just really good CG, but it turns out no, it's Javier. And yeah, he is amazing, and he's been doing this like all the time. That's what he
Yeah, like
does.
this is his thing.
Well, David Dastmalchian is like a really recognizable actor too. You might not know where you know him from, but he does a lot of DC and Marvel films, or he has. He was Polka Dot Man in Suicide Squad. He was in I feel like he was one of Ant-Man's like gangster ex-con friends in that film, unless I'm mixing him up with somebody else. Yeah, he was. Bird Box, like he's done a ton of stuff. He actually has done so much that you can't even read it all because he is in everything. But do you recognize him when you see his face? Yeah.
Definitely. I mean, he's got like a very specific look to him. So
Yeah.
you like if you just kind of scroll through any of his photos, you're like, oh, I got it, you know?
What's fascinating about this guy is he always plays kind of different versions, different people, not a character actor, although he could be relegated to that. Relegated is the wrong kind of word to use there because character actors are great too, but like he's always playing something completely different. Like the Polka Dot Man was mousy and timid. Like the ex-con that he plays in Ant-Man is like, a cipher, kind of cryptic. This guy that he's playing, the first mate, Wojciech, is authoritative, gruff. So I love to see the different things that he does, and I think he's a really fantastic
Yeah, and
actor.
I don't know. Did you see Boston Strangler? Because he was really excellent in that too.
No, I haven't seen
He
that.
plays Albert DeSalvo, the guy that they kind of pinned a lot of that stuff on, and he's really good in that. He's really good in Oppenheimer. I mean, he really is pretty varied in the things that he does. So it was cool to see him in this. And again, this is like the cast is pretty amazing overall. So.
So like then you kind of get into the rest of the crew of the ship, and some of them are really recognizable, like Nikolai Nikolaev always seems to play Russian goons. But I think that's who I'm thinking of. Yeah, but he's the guy who plays Petrovsky, and I've seen him. He's done a lot of TV, like I want to say Homeland or Daredevil, where he plays like a thug called Vladimir, these kinds of things.
Same thing
And
with the chef, the cook, Jean-Jean Briones has been in like a ton of television. And
okay. Yeah.
Weirdly, one of the things that connected quite a few of these cast members together is The Rookie, I guess. So
What's that?
it's like this TV show that's been on actually a while, and it's it's not my taste in things, but I'm sort of shocked that it's been on as long as it has been. I think it's been on since like 2018. But it's got Nathan Fillion and people I like in it. So, but I think it's one of those shows where a lot of people have like guest starred or been on
Okay.
little character roles and things like that. So anyway, so a lot of interesting cast in this. And I don't know, like I it isn't shock like the production and the cast itself, they obviously had a lot of money for this. It feels like it anyway.
Well,
So,
yeah, the budget is supposedly 45 million, which I will just point out is less, is 15 million less than they've budgeted for the 28 Years Later films. I think they've done 60 million per for those. And given the small set, but it's on a boat, there's a ton of CG and green screen in this film. There has to be. But it's kind of interesting what they did with $45 million.
But I mean, they do, it's like one set for the most part. There's a little bit of I don't know, Oceanside or and a little bit of interior shots at the end.
I mean
But
that scene in at the port where they just embark from, there's a ton of people on screen during that establishing shot. Like that, I was looking at that just like why? That was my first thought when watching that scene. I'm like, there are like hundreds of people on screen right now. Why did they feel like they needed that, in a
Well,
way?
yes, and then this brings me to a puzzling question that we should talk about during this, which and maybe, I didn't reread the captain's log of the voyage, the Demeter or whatever it was in the Dracula. But this crew seems incredibly small to me for,
Nine people.
well, to try to especially when you're talking about the potential for illness and, the need to be basically be able to steer the ship. And then there's another troubling thing about this that I'm like, I just don't understand how this would work. But yeah, they spend all this money on this port as they're going out of it, and then it's like only a few people on this boat. And I get that you want to limit the cast, but maybe you should have a few extras there to make sure that, you can trim the sails and whatnot, just in case somebody isn't able to do that. Just saying. And again, I don't know how many crew members that it's probably based upon whatever was in Dracula, but it just was one of those things where it was like, okay, it just seems like dangerous, but.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure the crew number could have varied based on the size of the ship, but I was just reading a headline this morning of a container ship that got attacked by,
Pirates.
Iranian government. But yeah, and they had a crew of 25, and that's for a. I mean, obviously, we're comparing apples and oranges because it's hundreds of years later, but a much larger ship.
Look, I could definitely see the logic behind keeping a crew small because you want to maximize the amount of profits, right?
Right. And but
But
they
you
have
also
to do all they have to do shifts round the clock. So with only nine and only five of them were sailors, I think.
Right, that's my point. It
Although they
seems
did
a
make
little
the
bit.
ship's doctor also take a night shift to like I think
And
no not yeah.
it seems a little bit, scary, but maybe they were used to that level of risk.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm willing to give them a pass on the size of the crew, but it does yeah, it does feel like they're opening themselves up to some risk there. Bram Stoker apparently had the idea for the Demeter when he was like visiting the beach and saw like one summer or something, and there was a crashed ship that was getting hauled out of the water called the Dimitri. And I think he thought that was a really cool idea that this ship, which actually though had come from Estonia, not maybe he just was like Estonia, which is you basically sail west to get to England through the Straits of I don't know Denmark or whatever, versus coming from Romania, which is in the Black Sea, which means you have to go through the Mediterranean. And I do have a big bone to pick with the navigation of this film, and they basically start this film at the end. It's that thing you do where there's a bunch of people running around in the rain saying, "There's a boat that's crashed." And we gotta, let's get down there, Constable. And so they run down to the shore. What's kind of interesting about this beginning is that it kind of already described this by tech in the text of like there was a
Yeah,
scroll.
and it was kind of weird to do it that way. I felt like it was redundant, and that was a little odd to me. I
Yeah.
mean, I think you could give a little bit of it, but it was almost like word for word. I don't know. It felt a little bit weird that
Yeah.
that's how they played it. I agree with you. I thought that was odd.
It's like a ship crashes on the shores of England. It is derelict. And then
And
we
then
get,
everybody just basically repeats what that
yeah,
says.
we have minutes of acting and screen time for these guys who don't show up again in the film, saying like, oh, there's a ship that's crashed and we got to get down there. And oh my gosh, I found the captain's log and I went aboard to find out if there was anybody left alive, but they're not. And I don't want to get back on that ship. And when you think about that one policeman who went on board to find survivors and comes back and he's like, oh, it's so bad. Like, what's he even seeing? Maybe he saw the captain.
I guess because everybody else was kind of gone, right?
Maybe he saw Abrams hanging from the mast.
Maybe. And nobody else has left. Maybe he read a little bit of the captain's log and it freaked him out.
And they're just holding that book open in the rain, and you could see
Yeah,
the
because
ink.
with that ink, which it's like, I think that'd be all gone,
That ink
probably.
is not like, gonna stay. It's not like a Sharpie.
No.
It's just gonna run right off the page.
Right.
But okay. That's so
But
that our
yeah.
so that's our couple opening minutes. And then we are suddenly daytime in Romania, in the port of, they use the word Varna, which apparently is an anagram for where the Dmitri started its voyage, which was Narva in Estonia. This might be a fictitious place in Romania. The problem is there's actually a place called Varna in Bulgaria, just down the coast from the Romanian border. And so then I'm just like, well, maybe the borders were different then, or maybe they meant Varna and it's all good. Either way, so they say they're in Varna, and we have scenes of a wagon train arriving in this town, which, as I've mentioned, is just crawling with extras. There are hundreds of people in these scenes. Like, we see Clemens playing cards. We see some of the crew members from the Demeter. And we see Wojciech hiring on new hands.
Right, which means they could have just added a few people into this. But yes, it's a very extensive, busy port scene. And I kind of liked it. I did think that it set up a little bit of the premise that they are the people that are bringing this cargo, who are basically enlisting this merchant ship to bring it to the UK, are spending a lot of money, a lot more than is usual. And there's definitely a little bit of like, bad vibes going on to get the ship, staffed up, and we see that there's a bunch of people that are able to be on this ship, and so and it sets up the whole tension with Clemens initially being rejected as the doctor. Again, unusual to have him as a doctor in this group, and a little bit of the comment is that we need there's that kind of that trope that we need men who can actually be sailors versus academics or things like that. And there's like definitely a scoffing there is some scoffing happening about science and Clemens like intellect and education. So I think that they're kind of setting all of that up in the hustle and bustle of the port, and it makes it does set the scene, and it doesn't feel it they didn't they went all out for this particular scene to show this how hard it is to bring the cargo onto the boat. It's not an easy thing, it's dangerous. And it sets up the whole thing with Clemens saving the grandson Toby
Yeah, because the
pretty
guy
well.
they hired instead of him is distracted and horrified by the fact that Dracula embosses all of his crates with a scary symbol.
Right, but can we also point out that they picked out a guy that is, blind or half
Yeah.
blind
Yeah.
instead of Clemens?
Maybe
And
they don't need to see, like, with depth perception on sailing ships.
right. But anyway, he sees the symbol of Dracul, and is just like, this is bad luck. And and again, there's lots of like things that are sort of like signals that this might not go so well, including with the people that brought the shipping, the crates and things, and
Yeah.
they keep saying things like good luck.
Yeah. We have to leave before the sun goes down. And
See y'all
they
later.
hand them a huge purse of coins that I feel like Wojciech says, this is more than they like almost as much as they're paying us to take the stuff. Like, I don't know. There was like some real red flags that they were not choosing to pick up on. Not to mention that there's like dirt coming out of one of the crates after it falls on the floor of the port. Oh,
Right.
can we also just quickly mention that Bear McCreary was did the music for this? I don't
Oh, yeah.
I read that after I'd seen it, and then I was like, oh, did I really notice the score? I'm terrible at pausing to notice the score during a film.
I saw the same thing, and I also was like, oh, that's nice that he did that. I mean, it was that, it's that kind of, it doesn't shock me. I mean, he's amazing at what he does. And I thought the score was good, and I was like, oh, that makes sense that it's him because it's kind of effortless for him, but
Yeah, it seems that way. Like the, he replaced their originally hired composer because the other guy had a scheduling conflict. And I'm just like, wait, he was your second choice?
use your backup.
He's like one of the best composers. Okay, cool, man. So yeah, so they get eventually everything gets on board, including Clemens, who gets another chance because he just happens to be loitering around the ship. Long enough to save young Toby, who is the captain's grandson, who also was just like, I need to look at whatever's on the floor underneath this crate that is being hoisted off the ground. I feel like they
Yeah,
could
I
have used some
mean,
more
just how
safety.
they treat Toby in this is, you and I talk a lot about like the bad writing for children, and I think this is there's parts where he's great, but there's just examples that are just kind of, you could have done this a little bit better since you're making him the only kid on this.
Oh, well, yeah, there's for sure there's a scene where
Yes.
he could have been written a little better. He definitely pulls Carl Grimes at one point,
Yes,
but
he
the way his
does.
story is the way his story culminates, I was not expecting. I did not expect this movie to be murking children
No.
as casually as they seem to do later. Which sucks and was tough, but it definitely landed a punch in a way that it a lot of the rest of the film didn't, you know?
Right. And
So.
I think that that part was, in terms of making the gravity of this and honestly the tragedy of this voyage, it definitely made that much more like a deeper cut, basically.
Yeah, because by this scene with Clemens saving him, you're like, okay, so. There's no women on this ship. It's
Right.
Clemens and the Onion Knight and David Dalmastian Wojciech. Who could survive out of this? I mean, maybe all of them. I don't know. The kid's definitely gonna make it. Like, because you don't, you know, when you're looking at your tropey horror films, you don't necessarily think, yeah, this kid is definitely gonna die.
Yeah, I mean, my initial reaction was that it was going to be like Clemens and the kid somehow clinging to the like detritus, and I
Yeah.
was right about part of that.
But
But
you always had Clemens figured for the final girl to not to, you know, gender swap that that role, but it's kind of does seem to be where he ends up if you're gonna
yeah, like
go.
I thought it would be him. And I did think that there would somehow be a like he gets the kid and has like sort of custody of the kid at the end, but that's not where they went with this. And it was pretty hard on certain points. But yeah, but they set it up with him saving the kid and then winning a place on the boat because the one-eyed sailor is like, I'm not having none of this at all. I am done.
I'm not even sorry that I almost killed that child.
None of this. I don't even care. I see that dragon. I am done.
Well, that guy's still alive,
Yeah,
probably,
but
right?
that's the thing. He's just like, I'm gonna take myself and I'm gonna to just get out of here. And then, it's and then Clemens, thinks he's like the luckiest guy alive to be able to jump onto this boat.
I mean,
So,
in some ways, he is the luckiest guy alive.
oh yes, on this boat in general.
But they get underway right at dusk, and there's a gratuitous scene of the Romani caravan drivers like stopping on a hillside to look at their ship sailing into the CGI distance. And like, you know, I don't know if they did a sign of the cross or what they did, but it was like a make a sign of the evil eye before they drive their. These guys must be psyched. They just got rid of the biggest blight on their countryside.
Oh yeah, they must be like really excited and to get rid of it.
If I was them, I would also not have hung around to help load. Actually, maybe I would have loaded the crates.
Yeah, I might have done that just to make sure it got on and just to
Let's
keep along.
expedite. Yeah, honestly, if you want to make sure the job is done, you should probably do it yourself, for sure.
Well, I guess, I mean, to me, like part of their maybe a part of their logic was like, yeah, they paid him and they wanted to get under way, but just in case he didn't, they wanted to get as far away from that area as possible, right? So I
Yeah.
guess I understand that.
Because this is, but yeah, this is a bustling town. You have to imagine that if Dracula had gotten out of his crate here in Varna, he would have been set for a while, which is kind of funny because later a character suggests that he wanted to leave Romania because there's nobody left there for him to eat. But we're like, the most populated scene of the film is in Romania. So it's just kind of a weird thing for that character to have announced. They're sailing down the coast of the Black Sea, the west coast of the Black Sea, toward the Straits of Bosphorus through Constantinople, or I don't know if it was called that then, Istanbul, and then into the Mediterranean. That's kind of our route for this first leg. We also get Toby giving Clemens a tour of the ship, which is where we get to know the rest, a few members of the crew. And they introduced this weird knocking thing, which was a big feature of the trailer. It comes up a lot in the film, too. What is your interpretation of the knocking thing?
I mean, like, 'cause they make a big deal about the kid showing that that's like a sign of like alarm that they can hear throughout the ship, and that's like, you know, you knock on wood and it's echoing throughout, so if anything really bad is happening, like a bad storm, everybody's hearing it. So I think that they're kind of setting that up, you know, and maybe a piece of that is that Dracula heard that and is mimicking that and does kind of do that, and they make this a big deal at the end to signal something else. So,
Yeah, they do. It's
yeah.
just funny to me. They're like, because Toby's like, look, if it's a change of guard or a change of watch or whatever, or if there's a problem, you do the knock. I feel like we never see the knock
No.
work, not one time, even though they're constantly knocking, except for when Toby's in the captain's quarters toward the end of the second act. You never see the knock work as it's intended.
Yeah, and also let's just talk about how loud it is on a ship.
Yeah.
How you would distinguish that from anything else would be probably pretty hard.
Honestly, the number of scenes where you have two guys on night shift who are just yelling to each
Right.
other, and I'm like, wouldn't everybody on the ship hear this and wake up? I don't know. I don't know. I've never been on a ship like that to know if it on open water, you probably got the sound of the water outside the hull, which is not insignificant. You've got the sound of things shifting in the hold. But I feel like you would hear the bass of people's voices coming through the planks overhead.
Yeah.
I don't know. But this knocking thing is apparently the best way to communicate on the ship, even though it never really does work, except for
Right.
when Dracula is just messing with people's heads.
Yep.
What do you think here, HA, is another question for you. If that one crate had not shifted. It's even during the tour. It's like just as they're getting going. And they're showing all the animals and you're meeting Huckleberry the dog, who you're just like, well, that dog's gonna die.
I know.
A crate falls and Clemens finds a big pile of dirt underneath it, and within that big pile of dirt, a person. And then they like save this woman and he like blood transfusions for the win. Everybody gets a blood transfusion.
Well, yeah, you mean that the blood types work, which it, they're not talking about, but whatever.
Well, I mean, the only one that probably makes sense is grandfather to grandson, but even that, if that hadn't happened, if Abrams or whoever it was had tied down this crate properly, would they have all made it alive to England?
You mean so that he could use her as food the whole way?
Like that was his intent in a way, right? For bringing her.
So yeah, that was his intent, but based on what we see, that
The
wouldn't
dude
make
eats
enough.
constantly. Yeah.
Yeah, and this is another piece of it. If that's what the appetite is for him, he's getting, we all know, well, hopefully most people know, the whole reason that he is going to UK
It's because
is
there's nobody left in Romania.
Well, there's that too. But there's this whole like Mina Harker connection.
say more about that because I don't remember the details.
Like, so Jonathan Harker basically,
Who's like the real estate agent, right?
he was like the solicitor kind of like, and he went there to he's kind of in like a barren land, and the way England is and the way London is at that point is this whole new sort of world for him and a lot more people. Like he's living in the countryside. Clearly the people who live there have been like giving him some kind of like sacrifices and stuff to keep him satiated. They add in a whole story about Mina Harker and, like there's, at least in a different piece, but basically he goes there and it's like, aha, I've got like this whole new feeding ground. But the whole point is that if he's going to go on this big voyage and this one woman isn't going to be enough and there's only a few people on this crew, like he kind of has to make it there. And so like this seems like a weird thing that he wouldn't somehow like that he would go about like sort of killing everything, because it's like he killed all the animals. We're seeing how this whole voyage happens. Again, maybe he can't control that hunger. I don't know, but it just feels like this doesn't seem like the best plan, right? Because you're going to be stuck on a ship, which is what happens with no crew, and maybe hope that it hits land.
Yeah, I'm not clear about what the original intent was, and I've also screwed up the timeline. This doesn't happen on the tour. It happens 1 or 2 days into the voyage when they hear the animals freaking out at the breakfast table
Oh
one day.
But you know what I'm saying? Like it's sort of like
Yeah,
there.
it's what they don't establish is how often he actually needs to eat.
Right. And then we do see his victim, the person Anna, who they bring along for this, has been kind of sacrificed by her people to give him like a food source during this voyage. And it does, like, I guess that's part of what's sort of confusing to me. That there's bites on her, so it shows that
But healed. They're like super healed. There's
yeah,
scars.
so he's had some control, it seems, but
But he
this
can never do that again for the rest of the film.
right, so that's kind of weird.
Yeah. Because they also talk later on in the film that he's been rationing his meals by only killing one person a day. But then there's this woman who he clearly has eaten 4 or 5 times based on the number of bite marks we see. So it's yeah, very, it's I think that this is a plot hole, which is unfortunate, and it's not the only one, which is also unfortunate. So yeah, we are introduced fairly early on to this. Well, she's kind of comatose, but Anna, and she and Clemens just starts giving her blood transfusions after listening to her heart for like half a hot second. We've also met the rest of the crew by now. We've met the kind of surly sailors who are cursing and talking about brothels in front of the 9-year-old Toby, talking about how they're going to spend their 75 ducats when they get to England. And we've met Joseph the cook, who is really religious. Yeah, there's some stuff with Joseph and the unfolding of this vampire story that kind of reminds you of Midnight Mass a little bit.
Yeah, and I mean there is like a whole theme, so and one thing this is probably also worth talking about, because they do play this a little bit out on the boat with Joseph. This idea that so they talk a little bit about like religion and people's sins and things like that. And so that was the other thing, is that London was sort of like a hotbed of like people were saying, morals are decaying and things like that. And so the idea that he was potentially going there because his actions and the things like that wouldn't be as recognizable, in part because of the dense population, but also because people like the whole fabric of society was kind of falling apart, and people weren't sort of following the tenets of religion and morality. And so there's some commentary on that definitely in Dracula, and that's like the whole thing about vampires in general, is that it's the idea that this is part of like an indication of like moral decay. The blackening of a soul. And you're right. So that's got like some Midnight Mass connotations for sure.
I will say though, to compare Midnight Mass miniseries and this movie is a disservice because
Oh, definitely.
this
Definitely.
movie also shows the monster way more than Midnight Mass did. And I think that that hurts the film
I agree.
because there are early scenes where you see this like wizened, wrinkly vampire whispering Anna's name, like coming out of its crypt. Like that, I'm sure they wanted to just give Javier a chance to like strut his stuff, but I think that that hurts the film. I don't think you want to show the monster as early as they do. Although, like, it does give it a story arc where it starts off as this kind of weak, feeble thing and ends up as this majestic, smooth-skinned thing, a very different creature. So
Oh, and
maybe
there's,
that's why.
yeah, but there's also the other thing. Like he is capable of being in the guise of a human.
Ish. I mean, that last scene that he's in, I
But
don't know who, I don't know who's in that bar and thinks that's a normal human person,
well,
you
no,
know?
and that's I did. This is the thing I want to talk about. Like, like it's kind of they go the full on like monster makeup creature feature out here, and it's terrible. I mean, I think that Javier Otet looks terrifying here, and they did a really good job at making him incredibly disturbing looking. Like he is not in any way humanized at all. Like he's just this giant kind of like bat, but also like the teeth and
By the
the
end, yeah. I mean, at the beginning, he's like a slender man.
yeah, but he's still like there is like I don't know, there is definitely a like a creature feature aspect to it, but I agree. I think they show him way too much and he becomes less and less scary the more you see him,
Yeah.
right?
That's like an overall beef I have with the way that they decided to produce this. And it doesn't take long then for things to start going badly. You've got the animals die, Huck is killed, and then all the animals are also killed. It seems like on the same day. I mean, talk about rationing. I feel like he could have made some of those goats last more than 5 minutes. Yeah, it's just kind of bizarre. And so when this happens, I'm not sure where they are. It's not very long into the film. It's not very long into their journey. They talk briefly about going to port because if the dog had rabies, which is what they're concerned about, but then they will sacrifice their time bonus, which they're all like still trying to get the 75 ducats. So they're like, oh, we could go to port, but no, we can't. By now, I think they're probably supposed to be in the Mediterranean or the Aegean. They talk about being on the Aegean the first night that the vampire comes up on deck, because that's when Olgarin sees it in the spyglass. So that's after it's killed all the animals, and that means they're basically near Greece, right? The Aegean Sea.
And
Yeah.
there's also an interesting tension between like superstition, religion, science, all within
Yeah,
this.
and Olgarin is their like token Romanian guy on the crew. And so this is a world without vampires, though, or like where only the people who lived apparently under his castle knew about him. Everybody else is like, what is going on? That doesn't seem right at all. And Olgarin knows something not good is happening, but is like not really sure what it is. A lot of the other people just think it's Anna because having a woman on a boat is bad luck.
Lucky, yeah.
And so they're kind of like, we should be throwing her overboard because we always give stowaways to Poseidon, this kind of stuff, which is pretty hardcore, but
Well, I mean, look, even going back to the beginning when they're kind of doing the initial interview with Clemens, and they're like, oh, what good is any of that? And he goes, well, you can actually navigate with
yeah.
stars at night. And
What did anybody ever learn from a book?
Right. And so he like kind of counteracts that, which was pretty funny.
Yeah.
But it just shows their sort of like mistrust of that kind of knowledge. And so
He never really gets to use his book learning
no,
to win the
other than
day.
talk about disease and blood transfusions, and he even talks a little bit about rabies and how it's
Yeah.
transmitted and says, oh, it's only through a bite. But it does feel like the superstitions of everybody else on the boat kind of takes over. at various points. So
So
that.
every so often throughout this film, Captain Elliot, the Onion Knight, makes a captain's log voiceover, like,
I'll
ship
admit, every
star
time
date.
it's at the captain's log, I feel like it's like got to be Jean-Luc Picard.
Yeah. And he does say the date that this is happening. I assume these are like right out of the book.
Yeah.
And I didn't catch some of them, but basically the first one I remember writing down the date is July 18th. Petrovsky reported missing. Men searched the ship. We've already seen, yeah, so we've had the scene the night before of Petrovsky's on watch. He's doing the knocking thing. He's wandering around with his booze and his knife and sees like a really feeble looking vampire, and is about to, like, I don't know, stab it or like look at it a little closer because it looks really pathetic. But then it leaps up and tears out his throat so fast. Another kind of hole here with the plot is Dracula's coming from a place where he had free access to people to eat. So it doesn't really compute why he's so weak.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. There's things that don't totally add up, and it also seems like he's been able to obviously get blood from other things,
And
right?
he'd eaten all the livestock. That apparently wasn't enough to get him smooth and lustrous. Because it takes him, honestly, the whole crew before he gets smooth and lustrous by the end of the film. And he doesn't even eat all of them, to be fair. Like, some of them he just bleeds out. But yeah. So, but the day after Petrovsky goes missing, there's blood on the deck. His knife is on the deck. They're like, he probably just got drunk and fell overboard. And Clemens is like, you mean after he let all his blood go out of onto the deck? And they're just like, oh, it's probably fine. There's a lot of magical thinking going on the crew. They really want their 75 ducats. And guess what? With Petrovsky gone, that number just went up. They don't actually mention that as a,
As a thing, no.
but it's true, right? Because they did the math at breakfast. That in one of those early scenes. Anna has woken up, is now talking and is like, oh, he's on board, we're all gonna die. And everybody's just like, can you shut her up, please? Nobody wants to hear about it. Which is kind of funny. Ulgarin has seen the creature, and he and Clemens have an interesting exchange where they're up on the doing something with the sails. And Ulgarin's like, oh, so, evil, bad luck, badness. And Clemens is like, I don't believe in any of those things. I believe in things that, science and math. And Ulgarin comes back and he's like, dude, I saw your face the other night. You definitely saw that. Don't tell me you don't believe that there is a devil on the ship. And I thought that was actually a well-acted scene from Corey Hawkins, where he's just like, yeah, he doesn't have a comeback. He does just look haunted. I thought that was actually one of the better scenes in the film.
Agree.
So yeah, we don't have to go painstakingly through this. It's kind of that thing that happens in Alien 1979, where the crew one by one is getting eaten and beaten. They start to come up with a new game plan. The two of them get killed at once.
Yeah, I think so.
As Larson gets taken out. Oh, and Ulgarin is on watch with him, and that's when Ulgarin gets bitten but left alive. Dracula actually just smashes Larson's face. I don't, and I guess he must drink him. And then that's when he talks to Ulgarin too. He does this thing throughout the film where he mimics what people are saying. Because Anna has also been saying, like, oh, he's not a man, but he's not a beast. Like, don't underestimate him. But we don't really see him speaking for himself until the end of the film, which is
Right,
kind
and
of
even then
interesting.
it's not exactly,
Yeah.
he isn't loquacious. He
No,
doesn't
he's
like
not
say
super
a lot.
talkative.
He's a man of few words.
But he basically leaves Ulgarin in the rigging, and the crew wake up because the boat is listing in like heavy seas, and so they have to like get the ship back under, and then Toby has to get bled on. And now Ulgarin is actually a zombie, which is that
Yeah.
brings it right into our wheelhouse. And I like this sort of approach to the thrall of a vampire and what kind of form they take. And I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, and I liked the whole idea that the transfusions were kind of holding that off for Anna. And
Yeah, interesting.
And then, and then they actually talk about why it doesn't work for Toby, which is because he's, and he gets stalked. Like the scene where he gets stalked, by Ulgarin and then by Dracula, it's pretty rough. And I think that they definitely play upon everybody's, at least upon my sensitivities, despite some of some of the things I wish they had done better with him as a kid character. And this is very much a he's not in the house because he's never in the house kind of Carl Grimes stuff. Like you would think, given how things were going on this voyage, that they might keep this kid tight by their side, right? But whatever. But the whole stalking scene and what happens to them and the tension where they're trying to get to him is really, it's really hard.
Oh yeah.
But it makes it even more like it hits pretty, it's like a heavy scene. But then,
I mean, this scene made me wonder if the vampire can like travel through shadow or something. Like
yeah, it was weird because it was like he suddenly, yeah, I
he was
agree.
in there and then he wasn't. And like in other scenes, he's been breaking through wooden walls and doors and things to get into spaces.
Well, and again, it makes you wonder why they aren't able to really find him and kill him off during sunlight hours, but all good.
Nobody even has this idea. Like the
Right.
one time that Anna and Clemens are like, let's open the crates. It's the middle of the night.
Right. Why would you do that in the middle of the night? Anyway.
When you still have enough crew, you haul all the crates back up onto the deck in the sunlight and you open them up. Like, I feel like this is the what people, if they knew that what vampires were, could do, but these guys don't apparently have that.
Does, but she does,
She
so that's the
should,
thing.
yeah. But she's also like, oh, you're gonna open up the crates? I'll come too. Let's do it at night. But by the time Ulgarin is into a, like is a zombie, but he's like comatose the night before the Toby stuff happens. We're basically down to Joseph, this guy Abrams, the captain, Anna, Clemens. Not a lot of people left. And it's, this is where we're kind of getting into Joseph keeps like accusing everybody of their being too sinful. I don't remember what he says to Clemens, but he calls Anna like basically Gomorrah. And it's not surprising that he chooses. I think it's the next night because Toby gets killed, and it is a tough scene. And Ulgarin did. How did they kill Ulgarin? Oh, he burns on the mast.
Yeah, he
That's right.
burned. That's like pretty rough scene, and I do like how they take him out of his misery. They're like, "Oh my gosh, we can't even let him do this," and it's terrifying and awful.
Yeah, and I think that's what sends Joseph over the edge. Seeing somebody burn in the sunlight, he finally is like, you know what? I'm gonna knock Abrams over the head and take the rowboat. But by now, little did he know, Dracula's turned into his big bat form, and nobody's getting away. And so Joseph goes out rough, and then Dracula like sends the little lifeboat back to the ship in the biggest burn of all. I thought that was pretty funny. Although it wasn't supposed to be.
Yeah, it wasn't supposed to be funny, but it was kind of funny. So, yeah.
And like as I'm looking at these dates, July 24th is the night that Ulgarin was bitten and left in the rigging. Then the next entry in the captain's log is 1st of August. So it's actually like a week in between each of these because it was 18 July, 24 July, 1st of August. And here, Captain Elliot says, past the Strait of Dover, 5 days to London. Here's the question. Here's where I get into my navigation question, HA. If they're actually coming from the Black Sea, which we've established they are running along the coast of every country,
Right. So
basically.
there's
Like,
a way to do it. Yeah, absolutely. I was
they could
thinking.
have pulled over in France multiple different times. Spain, no problem. Bay of Biscayne, they even talk about Bay of Biscayne. There's Portsmouth is way closer than London. I mean, I have a feeling like after you've lost two or three crew members, just go anywhere. You must realize you're not going to get your 75 ducats. So that to me is like the biggest possible plot hole. Unless they had made this movie about going from Romania to New York, then this like idea that they couldn't pull over would have made sense. But here they're just like, nope, we got 5 more days to sail to London. We cannot go anywhere else, possibly anywhere else. I'm like, you can go to the whole north coast of France, you can go to Portsmouth and the southern coast of England.
And you
So
know what? They would have. If people are getting picked off like this, they totally would have. They're not gonna just like, I don't know. Like, I just don't feel like, especially when you've got the kid on the boat before everything happens, like, you're gonna get the captain would absolutely be motivated to get that kid off that boat. There, money is no longer a motivation once you're seeing this stuff happen. So, yeah, I agree. I was like really kind of puzzled by this, but all good. But we, this is, you know, that you gotta sort of go along for the ride.
Yeah,
And
it's troubling. I mean, you add up all these story and plot holes, and it kind of does really mire the film a little bit, even though you're still wanting to, like, the reason why this worked in Alien is because they were in space and they were mile like light years away from anywhere, right? Like, that's why that works. Either way, asked
no,
and
I mean,
answered.
that's the thing, is that space is space, but this is, you know.
This is, you could be 10 nautical miles off the coast of France at any one time, and even if there isn't a port, maybe just pull over and go ashore.
Right. And they have talked about this, and then the only, I don't know, it
They only
then.
talked about it when, I think they only talked about it when Huck and all the animals were killed, which
Right.
was
And then at
early.
the point where they're like, it's too late. It's too late. There's nothing
Yeah,
here
there's
in here.
nothing else we can
London.
do, but
London is the most closest port, you know, so.
it's wild. There's also a lot of scenes of the sun going down. It's often on the left side of the ship, I feel like, which makes sense if they're going up the coast of France. But once they turn toward London, the sun should be going down behind them. But that last sunset after their preparation montage, of like, we're gonna hammer down the lids and take some stuff up to the crow's nest. We're really gonna take care of this vampire. The sun is still setting, like, off the port bow of the ship, and I'm just like, well, you guys are not going to London. I don't know what to tell you.
Once again, Dracula, what are you doing here? You're like basically eating the whole ship. Nobody is going to be there to sail you into port. So if you really want to get into like new feeding ground, how is that going to work? I guess maybe they show that, like, and they show this with Joseph, who finally has the bright idea to try to get away, I guess, to maybe the coast of France or whatever on his little like boat. Maybe two, but again, he decides to go once again at night. Like, what? And Dracula apparently can
Well,
fly.
you
And
could only do things at night in this movie because the daytime scenes are like 5 seconds of
yeah.
daytime, and then they're like, oh, and then the sun went down and it was nighttime again. So they apparently, like, half the reason why they can't open the crates during the day is because the
Day
director
only
was
lasts
like,
2 minutes, I guess.
days are only 30 seconds long and the nights last for at least 10 minutes each, so you guys are screwed. But yeah, and at this point, why can't the Dracula, he's got wings, why can't he fly to England or France?
Yeah, like why would he just stay on this boat, right? I don't know. Anyway, it's all good. I don't mean to be like picking this apart in the way, like, I did think it was this whole story was a lot more sustainable than I thought it would be, and a lot more engaging, and I did enjoy watching it, and I think that they made this, aside from the plot holes that we are kind of picking up on, I do think that they made this entertaining to watch. And it was better than a lot of films that I would like, little like kind of these kinds of settings that would have been really boring. And I did think that the editing and the jump scares and how they sort of set up Dracula in terms of like stalking the ship was great. The only like sort of big thing about that like I think took away from a lot of the tension was definitely showing him way too much. And if you compare that to say Wreck, where they build up all that tension and you don't really, and again, that's a little bit found footage and all that,
I
but
imagine Javier Botet is like, hey guys, in Wreck, that movie that I was awesome in, I'm only in like 15 seconds of that whole
right,
film.
like, and that was what made it so scary. I mean, there's like not, I mean, you don't want to waste him as an actor, and you definitely want to show some of the stuff with Dracula because people want to see that. But he's much more scary when you don't see him, when it's like the unknown. Jaws too. That's another good example. The monster until you like midway through, and it's also
And
building.
Alien.
Same thing.
I mean, part of this was just the realization that they couldn't make really believable alien costumes in
Right. I
1970s.
know. I know. And John,
But
the problem
yeah,
with the show, but
but
same idea.
it also works dramatically. So yeah, and when you have all these scenes of like a vampire whimpering and moaning early on in the film, it doesn't necessarily help with the terror quotient.
Right.
So towards, they have their attempted throwdown with the vampire after Joseph has been killed, and they're like, okay, well, I guess all we could do is try to fight him off at night again. It goes about as well as you'd expect, which is to say, it goes really, really badly. Abrams is like pulled off of the crow's nest by a rope and then slashed open. Wojcik falls all the way from like halfway up the mast into the hold and doesn't lose consciousness. He just has he has a badly broken leg, but is like, don't worry, guys, I will now try to sink the ship with my axe.
I know.
and then gets eaten.
Little old axe. Yeah.
That leaves Clemens and Anna, which we kind of could have imagined was how this was going to end from about, halfway through the first act. And they fight the vampire injures both of them, and then they jump overboard after pinning the vampire to the mast with a, I don't know, a Rube Goldberg thing that looked way too complicated and slow to actually catch him, frankly. But now they can see the coast. We know that there's a storm. There was also like the vampire to defeat their plan to to attack him. He summons mist. It's so still. The water isn't moving. The mist is just gradually, fingers of mist are coming over the. I mean, it's a pretty cool effect, honestly.
Oh, and
The mist.
that's one of his powers, so that's
Yeah,
good.
but it's a pretty cool effect. And then there's a cut, and they're in the middle of a raging like storm. and no time appears to have passed, really. Like it's in the middle of this fight after Wojciech has fallen from the mast. Suddenly they're in the middle of this crazy raging storm, which we know there's a raging storm, which is why the ship crashes into the coast of England at the beginning of the film. So it's
Right.
just, I thought that was kind of another curious decision that they made. Anna and Clemens float off on some wreckage. Anna turns into a zombie halfway through, which is a bummer for Clemens, who is then like, oh, I redouble my commitment to chase, hunt down this vampire. He gives
Yep.
himself a new shave, a goatee. I don't know how he has any money.
Yeah, I know. Where did that come from? Or maybe he got some of it off the boat. I don't know.
Dude's been unemployed, has student loans.
Yep.
Not sure how he has money, and also has just floated off of the boat, so none of his belongings are with him. So finally, he's like, I know where I'm going. I'm going to Carfax Abbey, and I'm going to chase down this vampire. But first, go get a beer at the bar.
Yeah.
And we're like, okay, yeah, he's just drawing a nice picture of Anna. It's beautiful. And then, as you alluded to earlier, the knocking occurs.
Like, hey. I mean, obviously, they're leaving this open for another movie, I guess. It also is kind of weird because, first of all, Dracula looks totally bizarre. No way this dude is sitting in a pub with nobody noticing him.
But he
He
has a
looks,
top hat on, so
I mean, I
nobody
guess
looks at
top
the
hat,
face of the top
not
hat
like a
person.
creepy, like, bat or whatever the heck he looks like. Maybe it's just in his nature and he's just toying with Clemens, but why would he even leave him alive? He could take out everybody in that tavern. It just
Yes.
feels like a little bit, you
Why
know.
would he leave Clemens alive to, well, I mean, I assume this is the thing. he taps his cane, gets his attention, touches the back of his neck where his cut is, which is how he's tracking him, we assume, and then like goes down into a dark, night-filled alleyway. And Clemens is like, and I endeavor to go and chase down this monster. I'm like, dude, you're gonna die in 5 seconds. Like you're gonna go down that alley, and he's gonna eat you because what do you have? You have nothing. You don't even have a steak. Don't even have garlic. You're done. Also, the crucifix did not.
Garlic knight to help you out.
Yeah, and the Garlic Knight tried to use his rosary,
That
and
didn't work.
that did not work at all. So
Yeah. And you know, I also kind of thought they were going, like, I thought they were somehow going to reveal Clemens as Van Helsing, because that's what I thought that like just how he is the nemesis of Dracula. Like I thought they were creating him and his sort of background, and that it would turn out that Clemens wasn't his real name, but they didn't do that. So I don't know. I don't know. And then I did read because I thought that, and I was sort of surprised that they didn't do that kind of a reveal. I did a little bit of research on it, and apparently, in sort of an alternate ending, they have Van Helsing appear in this tavern and talk to Clemens. So that's not where they were going with it. And they cut it out because they just didn't feel like it. They felt like it was like cramming one more thing into it. But
Oh,
that's
maybe
really
Viggo Mortensen was going to play Van Helsing.
maybe. I don't know who they had originally had had scheduled to do that, but so that's kind of where I thought they were going with this, as with Clemens as a survivor and being sort of this, sort of dedicated to hunting down Dracula, which is the classic role of Van Helsing. But no, they don't do that. But maybe they'll wedge that in if they do another thing. But I don't know that that's on the books. I don't think this was successful enough to warrant that. So,
Yeah, I mean, I guess if I was Clemens in this scenario, you know you're marked, you know that he can find you, he's probably talking to you in your head. You might as well just go out in a blaze of glory.
true.
Except he might turn you into a puppet zombie like Ul'Garin, and that would be a real bummer way to go out too. Was it entertaining? Absolutely. I wasn't bored at any point. It had a pretty good pace, pretty good chop. It was just questions that I had, like, why are they still trying to get to London after things are so bad?
Right.
And there are lines like Clemens is saying things in the third act, like he knew that he couldn't start eating us until we were in open water. And I'm just like, you're not in open water. You're off the coast of France or Spain or Italy this entire time.
Yeah.
So like, there was just like, I feel a gross misunderstanding of geography on some level. So,
Yeah.
and that's
But
hard to overlook for me. To me, that's like
yeah,
a,
it is. It is
yeah.
definitely. So I don't know, but that said, it was really nice seeing Corey Hawkins. I hope he's in more stuff.
Yeah.
It's fun. And I think as much as we wanted Heath to appear again, that's definitely not going to happen. So I'll take him in everything else that he might be in. And I mean, he's been pretty busy, so I don't think. But maybe in like it would be really great. You know what? Ideally, he would show up in another season of Black Summer, right?
Oh, that would be amazing.
Wouldn't that be awesome? This is my wish list.
You know, his TV credits are fairly short.
Yeah, no, I mean he's mainly been doing films and not anything small either. I mean he's been very, very busy.
And he was just cast to replace Jonathan Majors in The Man in My Basement, which is to be announced. It's filming now. So if that's like a new career path for some for a successful black actor to be like, oh, do you want to be the Jonathan Majors replacement? We can put you into, you can be Kang the Conqueror, whatever you want to do.
Like he's definitely he's been very busy. So I guess we'll have to see if my wish comes through true and he ends up in more shows. But there's it a girl can dream.
Yeah.
So
And hopefully we'll get to see some more Javier Botet. I'm not sure how you say his last name, but
it's great.
that dude is creepy. He can be the Slender Man slash
He was slender,
demonic. He
wasn't
was
he?
a Slender Man. Yeah, he can do that for any number of films, and I'd be happy to watch them.
It's kind of interesting when you think about these actors that do these kind of characters, right? This is what they make their whole career is based upon this. And like I think Andy Serkis is probably the other person I think of as being like super recognizable in terms of these kinds of roles, obviously with like Gollum.
Oh, he's
But
got on to do so much other stuff though, as himself, instead of like as a monster or as a creature.
he has, but I think a lot of people didn't realize, but I mean, he's done just so many things, just in terms of these kinds of like
Yeah.
creepy characters. And like I just like I remember the first time I saw Gollum and his physicality, and I think Javier Botet has like that similar physicality in terms of just it being very recognizable.
You have to wonder if he ever does roles without prosthetics.
Yeah, I don't know.
He has some Spanish language stuff on his filmography. I wonder if any of that is like, and as himself, just a 7 foot tall, skinny guy, Javier, you know.
I mean, he's definitely like making this is what he's doing, and I don't know, it's just always kind of interesting to me when people are doing that. I'm trying to think, is there other well, I mean, I guess you can again, he does his own his own thing, but Ron Perlman sort of made his own, you know, his career on being sort of like creatures for a while. And I guess actually that makes me think of Doug Jones too from Hellboy, also has that kind of like weird, I don't want to say weird, but like sort of like almost like an alien physicality or like movement and things like that in their characters.
Doug Jones, was he the fish guy? Or was that also Javier?
That's he's the fish guy.
And was he also in Star Trek Discovery, or was that Javier? I think that was Javier. Javier did some Star Trek Discovery. I think they might have both been in Star
They
Trek
were
Discovery.
both in it, no? Like they were
That's
both
they're
the
they look at
feature.
each other across the set and they're just like, yeah, it's you.
Right.
Yeah, he's Captain Saru is Doug Jones,
Oh my gosh, that's really funny.
while Javier, I think he only had one episode, but he got to be, I don't know, Ba'ul, only for one episode. That's funny though. I'm glad that they got to be on screen together. I'm hoping that they got a scene together.
Yeah, I mean that's it. So, you know, and anyway, like I mean, you know, Javier has like Marfan syndrome, which is part of why his physicality is what it is. But, you know, I think they're just also in the way that you know, like Doug Jones is like a contortionist and whatever. So I guess maybe to play some of these characters, you have to have a very specific type of physicality that lends itself to playing these kinds of acting pieces, right? And it's interesting if you look at both Doug Jones and Javier outside of it, like, you know, they look fine, you know what I mean? They don't look like these creatures, but they're both kind of completely just kind of guys hanging out. Like, I don't know. I kind of want to go to like tea with both of them and see what they have to say. Like, how
Yeah.
do you train for these kinds of things, right?
That would be cool to see interviews with them for sure. I do think though that I've reached the end of what I wanted to say about the Last Voyage of the Demeter. It was a decent film. It was entertaining. It just had some real plot holes, which don't necessarily make it like unwatchable. I think they're, to me, they're just distracting. If I'm being generous, it's a distraction from what otherwise could be like a cool story. And it had a great cast. And it had very good production value, great creature effects, great mist effects, great blood transfusions, all of these things.
Agree.
On a scale of 0 to 10 blood transfusions, how many would you give it, HA?
I'd probably give it a 5 or 6.
5 or 6. Yeah, it's tough for us to rate things because we see a lot of mediocre stuff, but it's like I'm still happy that I watched it, you know?
Yeah, same. It doesn't mean that I don't love it, because I do. And I really did think that the editing and the filmmaking here was great. And you know, I like a good ship story.
For sure.
You know, there it, so it's all good. But and I would tell people to watch this. I thought it, you know, I know that a lot of it didn't get the best ratings and it didn't do as well in the box office, but I still think it's definitely worth watching if you're into these kinds of films. And you know, all those things aside, the cast is fantastic and I thought the directing was good. So
Yeah. So let us know what you thought of The Last Voyage of the Demeter. It's available still not like to stream anywhere for free, but it is available on Amazon Prime or Apple TV Plus. I think Paramount Plus, if you have the Showtime add-on, it's out there. It'll become more available. Check it out. Let us know what you think. You can email us at reanimatedpodcast@gmail.com. Almost got that wrong. The rest of our episodes are online at reanimated.podbean.com. And the next time we get together, we're probably going to stick with vampires with the upcoming released film Abigail, Daughter of Dracula. Or is that the official title, or is that what it's based on?
I think that's what it's based on. I think the film was just called Abigail.
Abigail. Looks like terrifying child actors with lots of teeth. That's my initial takeaway from one image that I've seen. For now, we'll bid you adieu. Thank you for listening.
Indeed. Ciao.